Hey, this is Dally, and you're listening to the Fear the Sword podcast.
The Cleveland Cavaliers have won the 2016 NBA Championship. I am your host, Justin Rowan, and welcome to the Fear the Sword podcast. We promised you a belligerent drunk podcast, and that is what we are bringing you. The title drought is over. Kyrie Irving hit the biggest shot in franchise history. LeBron with the ceiling block and free throws to talk about the first championship in Cavs history. I have Chris Manning and Carter Rodriguez today. Carter, how are you doing, my friend?
I just kind of keep re-remembering that they won the title, like every 5 minutes.
It doesn't feel like, real.
And he just hitting the same nirvana over and over and over again. It's so funny because, like as a writer, you just want to be like this, like, you want to be a robot. You want to be this kind of, like, objective viewer of the game. But they won a title, dude!
I mean... Nut shot to David Zavac. They don't pay me enough to be a robot in this moment.
Nope. Even Aviate was feeling emotional.
He felt emotions. It was like a Disney moment. Aviate came to life. His robot heart beated for the first time. Chris, how are you doing today?
Dude, like... Carter's throwing some shade at me when he's talking about the robot. But, like, because all year I've been like... Ah! Worked up about a game that much in years, and I think that took off like 2 years of my life. Like, I have a headache right now, like, I feel like crap, but oh my god, like, I there's a part of me that wanted to drive downtown, but they're already blocked off the exits, and someone stole a fire truck apparently, so I think Cleveland's gonna burn down anyway.
Yeah, Cleveland might burn to the ground. Like, who cares about, like, roster construction beyond this season? Like, Cleveland is going to burn to the ground.
There's not going to be a parade at this rate. Like, it's just going to, like, be the city burning in flames, and probably good for a lot of reasons.
But. Now, the most important thing that we need to analyze is it going to be the Columbus Cavaliers or the Cincinnati Cavaliers next year when Cleveland burns to the ground and they need to temporarily relocate? Chris, what you got?
I'm going to go off the beaten path, and I'm going to go with I'm just going to say they play at Independence or the practice facility.
Does that make Sir CC Sir Icy? Icy Championships? I don't know. Matt, I don't even know what to discuss. Like, what do you do after you win a championship? That, like, to me, that's just – it's mind-boggling because Cleveland, even though I've spent my entire life – rooting for this team, basically, since I had any inclinations for rooting for the NBA, Cleveland was just the team that I had picked. And to see the fans that, like, over the years, and I'm sure both of you can kind of speak towards this, but just the passion that you feel from the fans, one way or the other, when things go bad, just how down people could get, and kind of the pits of despair that we felt after being down 3-1 in this series, being the first team in NBA history, or at least in 50 years, to force a Game 7 after being down 3-1, and then after that, going into hostile territory, going against a 73-win Golden State Warriors team that had not lost three straight games and winning a Game 7 on the road behind strong play from Tristan Thompson, Kyrie Irving hitting the biggest shot in the history of the Cleveland Cavaliers franchise, LeBron James coming through in the biggest moments in franchise history.
How did you feel when LeBron, like, went down, though? Because I about died for a minute there. I was like...
I lost my mind. After he missed the first free throw, I was like, oh my god, this is it. This is the Cleveland moment.
There were so many moments in this game where I thought, oh, there's going to be such a Cleveland way for this to end, we're just going to hurt. But it never came.
It didn't happen. LeBron hits the second free throw. Kevin Love plays lockdown defense. And shout out to Kevin Love, because he played his absolute heart out, because against 78 out of 20 or 78 out of 28 out of 29 teams that the Cavs will face in a season, the Warriors are the worst matchup for him. He contributed in a huge way against all these other teams. And then in the biggest moment in Cleveland, maybe in Cleveland sports history, after everything that's happened over the last 52 years or so, Kevin Love plays lockdown defense on Steph Curry, forces the miss, and the Cavs go on to win an NBA championship. Carter, we'll go to you on this one. What can you say about the contributions of Kevin Love, of all the unsung heroes that just came up in such a big way for this team?
It was so fun because Love went 3 of 9 for 9 points. And, like, I think going into this game, if we had heard, okay, Kevin Love is going to go 3 of 9 for 9 points, we'd assume he went, like, 3 of 8 from 3. He went, you know, from 0 of 7 from two-point range and just was brutal. But no, he rebounded his ass off. He defended so well on Steph on that late possession where the narrative was just so ripe. Like, oh, the guy who didn't fit on this team gets stuck on the MVP late and they get roasted for it. They lose because of this. and no, it just didn't happen. He played great defense. And even that, just the whole final possession was like, it was so poetic. It was like written in a book. LeBron gets the chase down block. Then Kyrie hits the three. And then Love locks down on Steph. And it's just like, oh, man. It really felt storybook going into this game, which had me feeling skeptical. You know, like, this seems kind of too cute, too good to be true. But nope. It just all worked out.
I really can't describe kind of the words of just how big Kyrie and Tristan stepping up in this game is to me. Because especially as an outside fan, somebody that never lived in Cleveland, the association with the Cavs to me, like I started rooting for them because I was trying to study Carlos Boozer, then they draft LeBron, and then just over the years developing this closeness to the team. And then you go through the one tough year after LeBron leaves, after the decision. And then the beacons of hope after that helped keep me around and gave so many Cavs fans hope again was drafting Kyrie Irving number one overall, Tristan Thompson fourth overall. Thompson, this raw big man that just stepped up and earned every single dollar of his contract in these finals, just proving to be the ultimate center against this Warriors team. I know coming into tonight, Thompson on Curry, straight up. I believe there's 28 possessions that Thompson guarded Curry straight up coming into this Game 7. Curry only averaged below 0.8 points per possession against Thompson guarding him number 101. Chris, talk about the impact that Thompson had in this final series and obviously in this decisive Game 7.
Tristan Thompson in the last two games was the best I've ever seen him. I mean, I don't know if you saw the quote, but someone asked him like before Game 7, like, what would it be like for you to hit a game-winning shot? And he like laughed and was like, you mean get an offensive rebound? Like, he just knows his role so well that he did it perfectly. I mean, he goes out and defends Curry. He's getting rebounds inside. He's like adequately defending the rim in a way that, like, it's not shot blocking, but it's, like, forcing weird shots. He's making Draymond Green do all these different things. This is the best... It was the best we've ever seen him, and it's the best version of Tristan Thompson, and you absolutely needed him to do that. I mean, the Cavs kind of got the blueprint with Oklahoma City a little bit, but, I mean, Thompson with his mobility, with his... everything. And also him hitting shots the last two games and hitting free throws.
like
free throws. Oh my God, like when so he stressed. When he
that
when
hook he, shot in the post, I believe yeah. It even came with his left hand. Like that was hilarious to see.
I'm like, he is gonna brick this and it's just gonna I'm gonna be mad about it, but he made it. And
it was clutch with a K. Shout out to Rich Paul.
Shout out to Rich Paul.
And since we're doing shout-outs, and this is going to be one of the least organized podcasts, and I apologize to the listeners, but I'm sure none of you even care about it at this point. Scott Campbell, who is a former NHL player, NHL Jets player, obviously in Winnipeg. Just gave a shout out to all of Cavs Nation and us for finally winning a championship. Knows what it's like. I always said that Winnipeg was kind of like a Cleveland North team that had a rich sports history, had a rich economic history way back in the day, and then for one reason or another, it all fell apart. So it's just kind of funny to see just the reaction that so many people from so many different walks of life have just from seeing this Cleveland team win a championship. And it's funny because sports is always the ultimate kind of escapism for people. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter a ton, but it's an outlet, right? It gives you that thing. It gives you something to take pride in. There's, even though kind of that nationalism pride is a little bit overrated at the end of the day, a sports team can give you that sense of community. And when all things are going wrong, that's something that you can kind of lean back on. And this moment for Cavs fans in the city of Cleveland is something that can never be taken away, no matter what. This is something that's always going to stay. And I'm just so happy, as somebody that got to go to Cleveland for the first time 2 years ago, again last year. I didn't go this year because, well, one, for financial reasons, Canadian dollar sucks, obviously. But also, my trips to Cleveland have always been kind of preceded with injuries, both Kyrie tearing his shoulder 1 year.
Glad you stayed home, Justin.
What's that?
Glad you stayed home.
Oh, Kyrie tearing his shoulder the first year I went there, the night before my flight, Kevin Love getting his arm ripped out by Kelly Olynyk the following year. I want to take some credit for this championship.
Proud of you.
Carter, we'll go to you with this one. LeBron, like, I just, personally, I feel like this just cements his legacy. Like, this, beating a 73-win team, being the first team to come back down from 3-1, everyone was already kind of quick to judge him with a 2-5 label in the finals. Now he's 3-4, and winning a championship in his hometown, killing a drought. What are your thoughts on LeBron in this moment, this crucial moment in franchise history?
It's pretty nuts that a guy's greatest career accomplishment comes in like his 13th career season. Is it 13 for him?
It's around that.
Yeah. So like most people, you know, they do what they do. You know, their 6th, 7th, 8th season. This guy's been around forever, and his greatest accomplishment comes when most people are starting to wrap up. You know, it's insane. He really put the team on his back, and I almost am kind of glad they still won despite him not having that otherworldly game. You know, he had a triple double or whatever, but he still had five turnovers. You know, it wasn't these, you know, complete virtuoso, just put the whole team on his back by going nuts kind of games. This is a gritty, competitive, tough game where the Cavs had 40, 50 opportunities to break, and he just kind of wouldn't let them.
It's fun, you know, because it's also a testament to the team that David Griffin put together. Like, it just LeBron feels so much rewarding. It's not like LeBron just walked in as that savior. He took them to another level in games 5 and 6. Like, he just elevated them to a totally different level with these monstrosinous kind of games. But it was a whole team effort, and LeBron just came through in those big, big moments when you need a star to come through.
You know what I was thinking about, even during Game 6, was when he was kind of... Because I think Game 5 he was great, but Game 6 it was just this... You know, it was just him, you know, so he really willed them to that win. And I was just... I turned to one of my coworkers. I was watching that work, which, and it was the least productive work day of my life, but I turned to one of my coworkers and I was like... It's so nice to get to root for LeBron James again. What an honor it is to, like, because even when he was Miami, even when I was trying to be, you know, kind of an evolved smart fan, you know, it still, like, wasn't fun to watch them win titles in Miami. And it's so good to get to have fun watching this guy play because he's so unreal, and we're going to really miss him when he's gone.
Mm-hmm. And it's so nice. Obviously, I touched on this earlier, but, like, it's just so nice to see Kyrie kind of step up on this level. Like, after games 1 and 2, where game 1, he had more points than shots, it was nice, but you could tell he was definitely frustrated. I started working on a bit of an article just kind of talking about the learning experience of these finals, it being his first finals, kind of adjustments he needs to make. Obviously, you never want him to become a pass-first point guard because he's so much better at scoring than most players. But you just saw the adjustments from Kyrie throughout the season. And I remember prior to game one, Brian Windhorst was talking about how much focus Kyrie was putting into studying the film, making sure that he was the player they needed to be at the right moments. And that was exactly what Kyrie was. After games one and two, he adjusted his game. Chris, we'll go to you on this one. Talk a little bit about Kyrie and his growth throughout these finals, because he's in his age 23 season. He just turned 24 a couple months ago. He stepped up on a big stage, and obviously he's a big part of why LeBron came to Cleveland, and his growth is going to be such a big part of the Cavs' future moving forward.
Kyrie Irving, when he hit that three, I think kind of, at least in my head, killed every single stupid narrative that he's like, not a true point guard and all this stuff. Or my favorite one, that Matthew Dellavedova is a better fit for the Cavs to win a title than Kyrie Irving. Like the dumb things that people say online and on Twitter especially. Like, he did that. He was huge in game six. He put in all this effort on defense. He made the body control he had on some of the layups tonight. Like, there's very few other point guards in the league that can do that. Like, he's a superstar. He's super young. He's going to get better. He's going to learn from him. He's going to learn so much from this. He's been my favorite player, like, since he got drafted. Kind of, like you said, like, he's been the beacon of hope. He was the beacon of hope when they were really bad. And even when he's playing crap, stamp for him, the first big moment for him. I mean, he hit the game winner. Like, he hit the game winning shot in the finals. Like, it wasn't LeBron, it wasn't Kevin Love, it was Kyrie effing Irving, and he hit that three. It was a leader three. Then he hit that pass before LeBron tried to murder Draymond Green with a dunk in the lane. I mean, Kyrie, man, it's so satisfying to see him do that on that stage against Steph Curry, against Klay Thompson, and just be what LeBron kind of had to hope he would be when he came home, when LeBron came back to Cleveland.
Right. And it's funny because we talked to Dave McMiniman after the finals of last season, and Dave's just fantastic. His coverage throughout the playoffs was just off the charts, as was his coverage throughout the season. But he was kind of talking about how LeBron, looking at Kyrie, even though he stepped up in game one of the finals, there was kind of that sense of how do you let an injury get in your way? And LeBron's obviously a cyborg, so, like, he doesn't understand that humans do get hurt and there are limitations. But to see Kyrie, especially, there was a lot of questions coming into this game. How was he going to respond to his foot injury? Festus Ezeli stepped on his foot. There was some concern that there was going to be limitations to his game, maybe not have the same explosiveness. But Klay Thompson, who deserves a lot of credit, like, I knew Klay Thompson was a great player coming into this series, but he's so much better than I even realized. He's a two-way player, 6'7", with a 7-foot wingspan. Just his improved dribbling ability is kind of off the charts. But what his defense on Kyrie, and then Kyrie hitting those tough shots over perfect defense from him, was just absolutely incredible. And like you said, Chris, like, for a lot of people, I'm sure they can relate that Kyrie was kind of their favorite player. He was the one that got them through the dark times. As Doc Rivers said after Kyrie hit his first career game winner in Boston, which it's funny, like, all these great players, it seems like there's these storybook moments for them. Kyrie's first professional game that his dad watched was against the Boston Celtics in Boston. His dad had tried out for the Celtics, didn't work out, but Kyrie hits a game winner in front of his dad in the place that he tried out for the pros, and ultimately failed, but Kyrie hits a game winner. And after the game, Doc Rivers, his explanation for what happened was, I don't know. We played a good game, and then Kyrie Irving happened. And it just feels like Kyrie's one of those players that eventually we're going to just have to accept that he hits these type of shots. The same way that we accept that Steph can take a shot from 35 feet out with 20 seconds left on the shot clock. Kyrie's that kind of player. He's been mentored by a lot of great players. He's obviously had LeBron in his ear. He's had Kobe in his ear throughout his career, and I think you see the effects of it. Carter, it's so hard to try to capture what's happened in this moment. Like, to me, nothing about this feels real, but as the buzzer sounded, just kind of describe your emotions here. Because I'm sure all of us are struggling to try to put that into words.
I mean, it's so funny because it just with this Warriors team especially, they had this just, like, the word I kept using with them was inevitable. They're so inevitable, and like everyone would, you know, the Thunder go up 3-1, they lose. Teams would go up 20 on them in the third quarter, and they and the Warriors would just still win. So you're just kind of waiting for this bottom to drop out against this team, and there's so much anxiety around the Cavs and all these players that have these horrible narratives around them. Love can't play D. Kyrie's not a winner. LeBron should have never left. LeBron is a bad GM. And, like, just all these terrible narratives that are just out of control. Just, like, they're just kind of all invalidated forever, right? Like, there's nothing. All of these dumb, frustrating storylines are just, they have the ultimate trump card. And you know, there's
a championship.
There's nothing more frustrating than the rings argument. But still, they want a ring. So when someone comes with these abstract BS arguments, it's just done. They want a title with this team, with Kevin Love, who couldn't stop anyone and is no winner and only puts up empty stats on bad teams, and Kyrie who doesn't play defense and doesn't make his teammates better, despite plenty of evidence that that's not true. Mm-hmm. It's just all done, and it's so nice. It's so nice. This team, you know, I'm sure this team's going to find a way to make it super dramatic and frustrating next year, because that's who they are. But here's
the thing. Like, this offseason, except for, like, the inevitable where someone's going to be like, LeBron can leave now, which, you know, it's already happened. It's going to come again.
Which isn't going to happen. But
like, right. There's literally no reason to have the, let's trade Kyrie for CP3
thing. Oh, God. Thank God.
Like, I'm so glad that didn't happen.
Like, and, like, I love Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley, but, like, we don't have to do the Kevin Love trade him for those two guys to Boston. Yeah. Like, we don't have to do that now. Like, our whole summer is basically just, should they pay Timofey Mozgov? No, they shouldn't.
No.
What do they do with Amon Shumpert? What is J.R. Smith going to make? Because he opted out of his contract.
Give like, J.R. everything.
Yeah, give J.R. like unlimited access to booze, charter flights to Atlanta, and whatever kind of money he wants. But like the offseason now becomes just sort of soaking in the title. LeBron, well, the biggest drama is J.R., Mozgov, and who plays the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot better than the take I was already working on about Kevin Love. Maybe what do you do with Kevin Love? And I'm sure someone's still going to bring it up. But, I mean, how he played in Game 7, and they won a title with Kevin Love against the Warriors. Like,
hold on. Can I interrupt you real quick, Chris?
Yeah.
You just referred to the Cavs as we, you robot.
No!
Look at you, you fanboy hack. Speaking of the offseason moving forward, Carter, you were a part of the article. I loved it. Just kind of giving the Cavs high school yearbook quotes. Mm-hmm. And you, one of you referred to Richard Jefferson as kind of, it's like Defense Against the Dark Arts. The backup to LeBron gets replaced after a year. Richard Jefferson, fantastic early on in the season. Kind of tailed off and then just huge for the Cavs in the playoffs. He announced that he's going to be retiring. So
do we trust that source though?
I mean, he's not a shirtless personal trainer, so I don't know if I completely believe it.
I'm actually blocked by that guy, funny enough. That dude blocked me because I made fun of him about Jeopardy questions.
Josh Teplitz? Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but Josh is my dude now. We're close. That's my guy.
Teplitz?
He's got the sources, and genuinely not a bad dude. I'm going to give him some credit, but I guess we might as well say thank you to Richard Jefferson, who gave his final year in the NBA, assuming that his source of Richard Jefferson is correct. Winning a championship, the longest kind of separation between championship game appearances for Richard Jefferson, who played in the finals as a rookie with New Jersey, and then in the final year of his career, won a championship with Cleveland. My God, that still feels so weird to say, winning a championship in Cleveland. I guess moving forward, there's a chance that Seti Osman, who needs to be bought out of his contract in Turkey, there's rumblings, I guess you could say, that he's going to be coming over for the Cavs. He's kind of like a small forward, Tristan Thompson, who he's not going to be an all-star, but he kind of does all the little things, plays well off ball. So I guess there's the possibility that he replaces Richard Jefferson. But Chris, we'll go to you on this one. Talk a little bit about the impact that Richard Jefferson made with what I guess is the final games of his career.
It's sort of crazy that he ended up being as useful as he was, considering. I mean, he gave space on offense. He was really active on defense. And I think off the court, he was one of the guys that I think, if and when there's a big feature of book written about this team, which I think there's probably enough there considering all the drama we've heard about and if the sourcing's there and whatnot, he's one of the guys who sort of made them kind of get along and like get together. Like he kind of made, he did the little Kev thing. He was just kind of like a genuinely nice guy. And just the fact that he was playing in the finals was probably not expected. I mean, he was not good early in the season, really. But then he became this small ball four counter, and he's, like, ancient. And he's, like, jumping and dunking and, like, doing well in Draymond and Harrison Barnes. I mean, you couldn't have... Like, he's what we thought Sean Marion was going to be last year, right? Like, this is kind of what you hope you get out of Sean Marion last year. You got that out of Richard Jefferson. If he's gone, maybe it's one of those things you can't strike the magic twice with that guy. Like, you can't. But maybe they find someone... Maybe they roll the same path. But Richard Jefferson, because of his Snapchat and because of how he played in the finals, goes down in Cavs history, I think. Like, I legitimately think he's not a huge piece. He's not a guy who's at the front of the story, but he's a guy who, like, he has a place now. And the day of reunion for this in 30 years, like, Richard Jefferson better be there. He deserves an invite for this.
Mm-hmm. You know what I keep thinking about is that when you look at the players who the Cavaliers have retired the jerseys of, they've retired like five of the Miracle of Richfield players' jerseys. Like, they've retired Nate Thurman's jersey.
The whole 2016 team, including Anderson Barrios, number 17.
Yeah, just get out. Go nuts. Go nuts. Because, it's so funny that, you know, you want to, like, your first reaction when you hear that they retired, like, a guy who averaged 5-3's number, it's like, oh, these idiots, you know. These losers. But, like, this team, this fan base, this franchise just really appreciates the people who, like, factor into the most emotional wins of their lives. And, like, Richard Jefferson's part of that now. He'll always be part of the best thing that ever happened to Cleveland sports.
I mean, the Toronto Raptors, who we played in the Eastern Conference Finals, have a banner hanging in the Air Canada Center for Bon Jovi. And I'm not 100% sure what the story is behind it, but if Bon Jovi can get a banner, god damn it, so can Richard Jefferson's Snapchat.
Yeah,
that's the bottom line right there. I just realized that I made a financial commitment that I'm wanting you to follow through on, and that was when LeBron came back to Cleveland, I tweeted that I was not going to buy a new LeBron jersey until it came with a gold tab on the back of it. because yeah. I had the jersey from the first era, and those gold tabs only come with the authentic jerseys, so it's about to get hella expensive on my credit card, but it's totally worth it. And
on that Canadian dollar, no less. Yeah,
I already bought a shirt for myself and my girlfriend, like immediately, like went on NBAstore.com.
Ooh, I should do that.
Yeah, they're like they got a couple, but they're kind of gray. They're not great, but they'll do.
I'm going to count on the Cleveland t-shirt economy to come up with a few good t-shirts.
There's already two. There's already at least two.
Is there one that says Kyrie in love or healthy?
Justin, like, if that's not the case, I'm literally going to go find someone to design us one of those on T Republic, and we'll, like, fund it through Fear the Sword. I'm sure our readers will buy them. I'll buy Sam one.
Oh.
I don't even know. We've never even interacted with her, but I'll buy that dude one and send him one.
There you go. Oh,
it's, you know, it. I tweeted this out, but it's so dumb to be a fan of a team.
It really is. It's really dumb.
You are so sad and angry and frustrated such a high percentage of the time. And, like, this is the whole point right here. Because, you know, like, if you really look at it from, like, an economic perspective, it's probably you're probably more incentivized just to be a bandwagoner hopping from team to team to team. Mm-hmm. But, like, the heights that I think...
Good shout out to my brother.
Yeah. The heights that we're feeling right now it's the whole point of it. And it feels so good.
Yeah, I got to wait until next year to do this again because this is way too stressful. I don't know how people do this 80 for 82 games.
Yeah, like, you robot. You thought you were better, but you're not. You're no, just much of an animal.
Yeah, I'm not ready for this. Like, dude, I gotta like how people do this for 82 games a year plus the playoffs. That's unbelievable. So props to both of you for like being nuts. Because
thank you.
I don't have that in me, man. That's a long season.
I have a lot of insanity in me. It's something that I do take pride in. This is probably the second time that I had a team that I root for that people globally would give a shit about, pardon my French, have a chance to clinch a championship. And the first time was Chicago Bears against the Colts, Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the Grey Cup a couple times, and they kind of crapped the bed. And this was the first time the Cavs had a chance to clinch the championship game, and now LeBron is 3-0 in games where he has a chance to clinch a championship. And I definitely thought his finals MVP was very deserving. I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit because I said if the Cavs were going to have a chance to win the championship, Kyrie would need to build at least a case, a legitimate case for being a finals MVP. And while LeBron, it's tough to argue that he deserved it, or that he didn't deserve it, rather, Kyrie had just as solid of a case. I have no problem with LeBron getting it. He was out of this world. Game 5 and 6, him getting 82 points combined in those two games is nothing short of legendary. But Kyrie was out of this world. And I think the future of the Cavaliers is very bright. Because LeBron,
I think so too. They just won the title.
What's that?
I think that it's bright too. They just won the title.
Well, like, LeBron is just such a high IQ player. You can see him having trust in his teammates. That was a big thing of these playoffs. Was he was driving more than ever, but giving the ball up. He was trusting his teammates. He was trusting the system. You have quality veterans like Channing Frye, who played such a big role in the Eastern Conference playoffs, but based on matchups, understood that if they're going to have a stretch big on the floor, it's going to be Kevin Love. But still contributing from an emotional standpoint, and I'm sure he's going to play a big role in the future. It's just, you can see LeBron aging well on this team as an unselfish, high IQ player that even as his physical skills decline, you have guys like Kyrie, you have Kevin Love, who's still very young, you have Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith's not that young, but eventually you're going to have Seti Osman coming
Chetty,
in.
Chetty.
What's that?
Chetty!
Dele, maybe he's still going to be on the team. Who knows? I don't know what the deal is. Dele throughout the playoffs was pretty good. In the finals, just completely absent, which is very abnormal for Dele. It's kind of fun to see Mo Williams get his redemption moment. LeBron, fast break, pass up to Mo Williams. But overall, it was just kind of weird to see Dele rather, not be himself. And you have to wonder if he's hurt. Chris, what do you think the status of Dele is? Do you think the Cavs retain him?
I mean, I think it depends on when he gets offered, but I can't see a team paying him actual money, like real, like backup point guard money, you know? Like, you think about what a high-level backup point guard does, I think of Corey Joseph. I think of a guy who can create, who can shoot, who can, like, take over the offense for a little bit when you need him to and just kind of fills in holes. Dele doesn't dribble well enough, and he doesn't create well enough to really do that. He's really a two-guard in my mind, so I think it just depends what he gets offered. I mean, I think if the Cavs are smart, they just kind of float him out there. You kind of see what he gets offered, and then you bring him back. Because, like, the tricky part is, I mean, you're paying him on Shumpert a lot of money, even under the new cap for what he does and how and he was this year. So I don't think you can really blow a bunch of money on Dele, but I also can't see a team, especially with how many good point guards there are, being like, yeah, I'm going to give Matthew Dellavedova $8 million a year. Like, that seems really high to me. Mm-hmm. So if you get, you know what I mean, and so you can maybe afford him, but I bet you in sometime in the next week we hear that he was hurt, because I think someone said he hurt his hamstring, and I kind of feel like he wasn't healthy enough to do what he needed to do against the Warriors. Like, he needed to move and kind of be functional, and I kind of get the feeling that I remember reading somewhere that he was hurt, and I could be wrong, but I think like he hurt his hamstring or something in like game two. And that certainly impacts things.
Yeah, no kidding. I'd like to see Dele come back. Overall, I think he had a really good year. I wouldn't be surprised if Shumpert was gone.
Shumpert's locked up, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm saying via a trade. I think David Griffin, even though coming off a championship, I think he's still going to be somewhat aggressive. But these are conversations for another time. There's still a draft. The draft is Thursday, as the youths like to say.
The parade's Wednesday.
My God, there's going to be a parade. I none of this feels real. I don't know what to say. I think at this point, we should probably cut it off where it's at. We promised a drunken jubilant podcast after a Cavs title, and it actually happened. So thank you both so much for all you've done throughout the year. Thank you to our listeners, your constant support. It hasn't gone unnoticed. A lot of people on this site, we give up a lot of our time to hopefully bring you content that you enjoy. We really do appreciate your feedback, all your support. We really try to do our best to give you the best Cavs fan content out there on the net. So I hope we were able to do that. I hope we were able to do you guys proud, because the fans of this team deserve this championship more than anybody that I can think of. I'm so happy for everybody. It's just an absolutely incredible moment. The championship drought is over. The Cavs have won a championship.
They won a championship.
So thank you so much to our listeners. We'll have more content. We'll try to figure out what we're supposed to do with the championship team. This is new territory for us, as it is for, I'm sure, the bulk of you, except for David, who's obviously a scumbag fan of the St. Louis Cardinals.
The Pistons.
The Pistons. He's not even a Cavs fan. He hasn't got his first NBA championship yet. I'm striking that from the record. David Zabak, amazing editor. terrible backstabbing Pistons fans. So we're going to end this podcast off with aggression. We're going to end it off with trash talking of our editor that's going to get us fired. And a thank you to all the fans who subscribe to our podcast, as you know, both on iTunes and SoundCloud. Leave us a review if you feel so inclined. And as always, go 2016 NBA Championship Cleveland Cavaliers.
Go Cavs,
I love you guys.
Man.
Go Cavs. We'll be back with more podcasts.